You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Christy Landwehr.
And I'm Sarah Honiger, and you are listening to this special monthly NRHA episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for this Thursday, June 13th, 2024.
Good morning, Horse World.
It's the second Thursday of the month. That means it's time to slide in to the National Reining Horse Association episode of Horses in the Morning.
In this National Reining Horse Association episode, we will take a deep dive into the nuances of how to get an amazing reining backup on your horse with NRHA professional Brandon Brandt and NRHA judge and trainer Craig Schmersal. Sarah, I am so excited about this show today for so many reasons. First of all, I want to hear all about what you just did with your DC trip with our National Reining Horse Youth Association. If you could explain for those that are just now listening to this monthly reining podcast a little bit more about what the NRHYA is and then what this DC trip means for the leadership.
Absolutely. You know me, anytime I can talk about our youth, I am so happy to. So this group was an incredible group of youth leaders. We got to have a collaboration with the American Quarter Horse Youth Association. And this is an annual trip for our youth officers. So NRHYA is all youth members in the Reining Horse Association. Anyone under age 18 as of January 1 can be part of it. And we have events across the country and we do a lot together to build a community and create leadership opportunities and scholarships and all these things for our youth members. But the opportunities as a youth officer are pretty special. And this DC trip is one of my very favorite things we do. So the AQHA youth officers and NRHYA youth officers went to DC for 4 days and they met with over 27 offices to talk about issues affecting the equine industry. So they were so busy.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And, you know, the opportunities are just so neat. One of the meetings was with GT Thompson. And the very next day, he actually passed the first version of the farm bill off of committee and onto the floor. And so GT Thompson met with our youth officers in the Lincoln Room of the Capitol.
Oh, my goodness. What an opportunity. Wow.
It was awesome. And my favorite thing that I will just keep repeating over and over until forever, probably, is that different congressmen, senators, their staffers, over and over, all we heard was that our youth officers were better dressed, better prepared, and more well-spoken than some paid lobbyists. So what a compliment to these young people.
An awesome compliment. And what an experience for them to be able to utilize in the future when they're doing interviews and when they're talking to people and when they're meeting people. What amazing things. Mm-hmm. To learn.
Absolutely. And I think the confidence it instills is really important too. You know, it's kind of scary and intimidating going into this huge, beautiful building and this really old, elaborate room. And you have to sit down at a desk and talk to these people. Sometimes the staffers might not know a thing about these ag-related issues, and sometimes they may be an expert. And so for these youth officers to have to go in there and talk about this and really own it, you know, they come back with confidence out the windows. I mean, just so much of it to spare and so well-spoken. And I know a lot of adults that are terrified of public speaking, and these youth just absolutely nailed it.
So Sarah, how does someone who's listening get involved if they have a grandchild or their own child, or they are the youth listening? How do they get involved?
Well, if you want to just kind of see what the environment is like, I would absolutely encourage you to follow NRHYA on Facebook and Instagram. If you want more nitty gritty, we also have a website, which is nrhya.com, or you could email youth@nrha.com, and that goes directly to my inbox, and we would love to help out.
I think it's awesome. And then what's so much fun about a membership organization is then on the opposite end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. we have a so fun program that I want to share with everyone today. And we're going to talk about it in a future show. So we're kind of teasing it right now. But for those of us that are in our 50s, you can ride in prime time mm-hmm. with the NRHA as a reiner. You can also ride as a master if you're in your 60s. And we even have something for 70 plus called Legends. How cool to be a legend. I want to be a legend one day.
And they are legends. I don't know, for listeners that maybe follow us on Facebook, we have a post about a woman named Dee Dee Engler. I hope I'm saying your last name right, Dee Dee, but she's 86 years old and just competed in Scottsdale. And boy, has she tagged on the heartstrings. We've had over 600 people share this post, and the comments are just, I mean, if you want to feel a warm, fuzzy feeling and have your faith restored in humanity, these people know Dee Dee is a legend.
And what are some ways that they can find out more about Dee Dee? Didn't we just do an article in our magazine, and where on our website and on social can they find out more about her?
Yeah, that's a good question too. At our web, or excuse me, our magazine is on our website, or you could go to rainer.nrha.com to go to our magazine directly. And the best thing about our publication is you don't even have to be a member to access the online version totally for free. So go read about Dee Dee, hear her story, and may we all be as legendary as her and these other legends competing, because man, is that cool.
It's so cool. And if we keep getting people into their 80s and 90s riding, we might have to do like Legends Squared. I don't even know.
That's so true. What's more than a legend? Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't even know. I know. We're going to have to brainstorm that one. Fantastic.
What a great problem to have, right?
That's right. So once again, anyone listening, there is a place for you at the National Reining Horse Association. Everything from youth up to legend. There's so many things. And now what's so exciting is that our Derby is just around the bend. Here we are in the month of June, and the month of June is Derby time. So, Sarah, you want to talk a little bit more about fans and how they can come and see it and the nights to see what and all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. By the time, you know, this airs on the 13th, everyone will be in the full swing in Oklahoma City at our Derby. It will be off and running. So for those maybe local that want to come, it's at the Oklahoma City Fairgrounds, and we would love to have you. We'll have vendors. We'll have events going in two arenas all day of the whole event. It really kicks off June 13th, and it concludes June 23rd. The really kind of peak events that I would encourage you to come for are the non-pro finals, which are Friday, June 21st. And the open finals, which are June 22nd, and the freestyle and para reining championship with Christy. I know you'll want to chat about this, is on June 20th.
Yes. And that's one thing that got me into reining is here in Denver at the National Western. Popped in. I'm like, I don't know what this thing is, this freestyle thing. And I knew about freestyle and dressage. And I went, all right, I'm going to go see what this is. And I was hooked. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what this is. And it was years ago. I was in my late teens, early 20s when I got to experience freestyle, and kind of been a fan ever since. So for those that don't know, it's we actually spoke on a past episode with Taylor Zimmerman, who won our event last year. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. She did a great job. So you can certainly go back on our podcast and see, listen to that episode. But it is costumes, it is music, it is creativity, it is pretty fun.
It's beautiful. And it's something that, to your point, you don't have to know all the technicalities of reining to really get it. You know, it's just beautiful and enjoyable to watch. I know my parents come every year, and it's a really fun family event. And for those who can't make it to our show, we do have a live feed that's totally free for everybody, whether you're a member or not. And it's on nrhaderby.com. Or if you subscribe to the Cowboy Channel, we're also showing our non-pro and open finals on the Cowboy Channel. So multiple ways to watch. If you're more mobile, you have an option. If you want it on your big TV at home and have a little watch party, that's always a great option too.
That is awesome. So again, it's June 13th through the 23rd. And if you do make it to Oklahoma City and come over to the fairgrounds, please meet us. We would love to meet you. Sarah and I will both be there that entire time.
Oh my gosh. How fun would that be? Please.
We could do a meetup.
I would love that. We can maybe see if Dee Dee will be there. Maybe she can sign some Rainer magazines for people.
That would be perfect. You may recognize Craig Spruessel from The Last Cowboy. He is a NRHA $5 million rider, the 2017 NRHA Futurity Champion, and a 2019 Run for a Million co-champion. He also is an NRHA judge and currently serves on our judges committee. He and his wife Ginger operate Schmerzel Performance Horses out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Well, I just want to start by saying thank you so much for inviting John and I, my husband, to come and see your reining facility. It was one of the first ones he has ever seen when we were out there visiting his brother, and he just loved it. So thank you.
It's my pleasure.
It was great. We got to see you in action and all of your assistant trainers on horses. It was a very enjoyable experience.
It's a busy day.
Yes, it was very busy. So, Craig, we're going to dive right into the show today. Let's go ahead and chat about you a little bit. Tell people a little bit more about how you first found the reining community.
Well, I first found, or my dad found, two 2-year-olds when I was 8 and my sister was 10, and he sent them to a local horse trainer by the name of Mike Florida. So it was from there that I got the reining bug. So, I mean, the rest is history. I mean, I was 8. I had a 2-year-old. Mike got my 2-year-old broken up for me to show at the county fair that year. And he invited me for a clinic. I stayed for the rest of the summer after that clinic. And then I stayed at Mike and Sean's every summer till I was probably 14 or 15. So that's how I spent my summers. And my love for the reining grew from there, obviously.
That's awesome. What a start.
Yeah.
That's a great trainer.
It was exactly what not to do.
Well, Craig, now you're obviously a very esteemed professional and a competitor, but you're also a judge. So when you're sitting in the chair and judging a reining run, what are some of the things you're looking for? And then how does that impact how you train horses that are in your program?
Well, the thing that I like the most is about the reining is the finesse. I like a pretty horse, a pretty run, a pretty rider. I like it to look effortlessly. That's what sticks. It sticks out in my head. It's just the finesse. You know, I like pattern placement. They have to hit their marks. They got to slow down at the right time. They got to speed up at the right time. They got to hit their shutoffs. And, you know, it's just, it's like a little bit of a figure skating, you know. You have to be precise and you got to be beautiful doing it. So that's what I look for.
And how does this impact how you train the horses in your program, being a judge? Does that help with those types of things?
Yeah, when I train a horse, I want those horses to look like they love their job. I like them to not tell on me if I make a mistake. It's just like any kind of team. You know, you gotta back each other up. If I make a mistake, they back me up. If they make a mistake, I gotta be able to not tell on myself in order to win money. So I think that's kind of my philosophy. And every day when I train horses, that's what I'm thinking about. If I go to a horse too fast, like in the stop, let's say, I don't want them to shake their head. So I make sure that those horses are soft enough that if I go quick, they accept the pressure and give and not, you know, pick their head and neck up or flip their nose out. So it's just one of those. That's for me very important. And I think that is how I train them. I don't want them to tell on me if I get in trouble or if I get late or if I miss. They can't rat me out. They can't be like your little brother or sister and go tell your parents, you know.
I love that. Well, and speaking of backup, but in a different way, what are some small ways that non-pros or horse owners listening to this podcast today can improve their own horse's backup, even if they aren't planning on doing reining, right? So many disciplines back up. How can we all improve our backup at home or in the show pen?
I think for me, I start off by teaching a horse how to back up by letting them stand straight at the fence. And then I just say, whoa, and I just kind of wave my legs at their shoulders until I feel them take a step backwards. Because for me, whoa means basically back up. So if they don't back up, I'll take a hold. I'll say, whoa, I'll take a hold and I'll pull them a step or two back and I'll turn them loose. And if they stop backing up, I'll pull them until they automatically or whatever, they back up. So if I say, whoa, push my feet forward and lift my hand a little bit, I want them to come back. If they don't, I pull till they back, then I release. If they stop backing up, I pull till they back, and then I release. Hmm. And it takes a lot of time, and it's kind of hard to explain. But when I push my feet forward, if they don't back up, I'll slap their shoulders and pull until they take a step or two back, and then I release. And it's just the pressure. It's a lot of pressure and release. You can teach a horse to do anything pretty much off of pressure. When they give you the right answer, you got to release. And that's basically how my whole program works. If I pick up on my hand and they feel the pressure and they give, I release. You know, if I squeeze my feet and if I'm holding my reins and I squeeze my feet and they give their chin, I release. So there's a lot of pressure and release in my training program.
And as a judge, as you're watching,
I probably really got you confused now.
No, not even a little bit. I'm just wondering, I have just an extra question. As we are watching a reining pattern in the arena and the horses go to back up, as a judge, what are you looking for? Is it number of steps going backwards? Is it that detailed? Or are there other nuances? What are you looking for?
Well, the backup, just like the turnaround, it's all about cadence. When those horses are, you know, they move those front feet like bang, 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 bang. You know, I don't like it to be sticky or whatever. It just has to have a nice cadence, just like your turn. I like the footwork. I don't care if they back up on a drape rein. I don't care if they take a hold of them. But a lot of people talk about if you take a hold of them and they give their chin and they kind of put their chin towards your chest, they don't really like that. But for me as a horse trainer, Where do you want them to put their chin if you're pulling on them? But the only thing about that is, for me, is if you're pulling on them and they're giving their chin, they have to be giving their feet too. So if you take a hold of them and back them up and they just give their chin and stop, that's very bad. But if you take a hold of them and they give their chin, but they also move their feet, that to me is what I kind of look for. I have to be able to control their feet with my hand, and I don't care if it's in the turn, the circles, or the backup. If I pull, I want them to give their chin, but I want them to give their feet more importantly. And it's not to say that they can't stick their nose, you know, out, but as long as they're backing up and have a nice cadence, I don't really care. So for me, it's all about cadence. And then a nice cadence, like a faster cadence, of course, is higher degree of difficulty. So you get maybe a little extra for that. And if you have one that can really back up fast on a drape rein, there's no bigger degree of difficulty for that. So maybe that's a plus one backup. So, you know, it can help your stop. If you had a zero stop and you have a really fancy backup, maybe you get a plus half out of the maneuver.
I think that's a great perspective, especially I just love incorporating that maneuver score. I think a lot of people listening probably don't know that every piece of that is part of your maneuver score. So I think that's a really great thing to mention of kind of, you can get yourself some points back.
Yes. You can dig yourself out of a little bit of a hole. If you say you hit a bad piece of ground or whatever, and you bounce or whatever, and the judge is thinking minus half and you got a fancy backup, maybe you can get it to a zero, you know. But on the other hand, I've been where I've had a plus one stop and a terrible backup and I got a plus half, you know. Uh-huh. It's all part of it.
Absolutely. Well, Craig, you have had a lot of successful non-pros come through your program as well, specifically a lot of green reiners and a lot of rookies. So for those listening that might be more on that entry level side and might think about entering one of NRHA's entry level classes on maybe a horse that isn't a reiner, what would you tell them to kind of focus on first, especially from the perspective of a judge?
Well, I think the judges' schools, they preach pattern placement. So if you're on a donkey, if you can work on where you are in the arena, that is mm-hmm. a plus. You know, learning your way around the arena is one of the hardest things to do because you're so focused on your horse, but then you need to be even more focused on where you are. And then sometimes if you lose your focus, you miss the center of the arena, and it doesn't matter how pretty your circles are. You could have a plus half circle, but if you miss the center of the arena, they're going to ding you. You know, I'm talking about 10 feet off center, you mm-hmm. know, roughly. You know, if you have a plus half circle, but you miss the center of the arena, they're not going to give you the credit that you earned just because you missed the center of the arena. And the pattern placement, I think, is the biggest thing. Just making sure you can get around that arena, you can find your way around that arena and not get in trouble. And I think that's, I don't care what you're riding, you can always work on that. I mean, if it doesn't even change leads or, you know, turn around, you still got to do it in the right place. And I think that helps you build your foundation that you will put your, you know, later on you will put big runs together. But you got to start with knowing where you are in the arena. And I think that's the biggest problem. People just get lost. You know, the circles, for instance, you know, if you take off in a lead departure and you're 5 feet off one rail, you should be 5 feet off the other rail. But a lot of people will hug one rail and then be 15 feet off the other rail, you know. So it's just one of those things. I mean, most every person in the reining, it's why it's such a great sport. They all make every mistake possible. And they, as long as you have a good trainer that points it out to you, I think that's how you'll grow.
I think that is so awesome and so good for people because, you know, there's so many other disciplines that require good pattern placement, right? Western horsemanship, dressage, whatever the case may be. And as we well know, we end up with a lot of hunter jumper riders that come over to reining, also a lot of arena placement. If you miss the jump, that's probably not a good thing. So just to start with the basics, right? And just explain exactly. Pattern placement. I've never heard it said like that, Craig. And I think that that's brilliant because those of us that are coming maybe from another discipline would be like, oh, I already have that part. Okay. Good, right? So wonderful, wonderful advice. So if people want to find out more about you and your program there in Arizona, what are the best ways to reach you besides the NRHA website? What is your website and Facebook and those types of things?
Well, my Facebook is me, of course. And then I think our website is smersalreining.com.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it, Craig.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
That was so amazing to hear from Craig Schmersal. And I love that he related reining to figure skating because we all do that all the time. And so it's only fitting that we have an ex-ice hockey player coming up next on the podcast today.
And I'm so excited to hear more from him. And just so everyone knows, Horses in the Morning is pre-recorded. So we actually recorded Brandon last week. And unfortunately, this past Saturday, there was a tragic barn fire at where Brandon trains out of. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about how folks can help if they want to, Sarah?
Absolutely. I mean, just full transparency for people listening and people in our community. I mean, this is just a really heartbreaking thing that we're sitting here and talking about together today. And it's something we all have nightmares about and something I never dreamed we'd be on here talking about together today, if I'm honest. And so we know the horse community, the reining community, we all come together in times of tragedy. And this is certainly one of those times. Brandon Brandt and Eric Priest both train out of Ohio, and they had a really tragic barn fire. And we are having donations at the 4/6 NRHA Derby presented by Markel here in Oklahoma City this week. But if you're listening and you're not in the area and this story has touched you in some way or you feel compelled to donate, please visit the NRHA social media. There are links there to the Brandt and Priest Family Fundraiser. And they are having an auction coming up. It starts June 24th, and I know that they would appreciate any sort of donations or participations in that auction.
Yes, and the Facebook page and also the Instagram page for the National Reining Horse Association is where you will find this information.
We are so excited today to be joined by Brandon Brandt. Brandon Brandt attended the University of Findlay and earned a bachelor degree in equine science and business management. Since then, he's made many level four finals, has been a top NRHA professional, and coached many successful non-pros. Brandon and his wife, Kathy, live in Ohio, and he has NRHA earnings of $800,000. Brandon says he appreciates the trials that make him a better person, a better trainer, and a better horseman, and we are so happy to have him with us today. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate being on.
Well, we are so happy to have you. And my first question really feels quite timed with what's happening in the sports world right now, as everyone is vying for their shot at a Stanley Cup. You actually started your sports career in ice hockey.
I did. Yes, ma'am.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you went from ice hockey at Findlay to the equestrian side, just kind of how that all happened? It's a kind of an interesting path, Brandon.
Well, it is. When I was growing up, I was a big sports fanatic. And one of my best friends, Chad Ziegler, actually his dad played hockey at the University of Pitt. And he was just, I just got to become friends with Chad in high school. And next thing you know, he signed up for hockey. And then I got signed up. I think I was 7 years old, 8 years old. And I just became totally addicted with the sport. I love the competitive side of it. And then that led to, I played, it's called junior A, I guess you'd call it like a minor league type deal. And from there I, got an offer to play at the University of Findlay, which was Division I at the time. And, you know, growing up where that intertwined with the horses was basically my dad got some horses for my sister. And I kind of started to kind of fall in love with the horses, simultaneously there. Well, I would say I was probably 12, 13. And then, once I went to Findlay, I really, really fell in love with the horses, with the equestrian program being there and everything like that. Jared DeClaire actually stuck me on my very first reining horse and took over from there with the reining horses.
That's awesome. I did not know the Jared part. I think that's really a neat connection there. And how do you think, you know, growing up in that hockey career, what kind of unique perspective do you think that gave you, or kind of a different take on the career of being a horse trainer from that kind of background?
I tell you what, hockey is honestly, and I'm not just saying this, it's probably one of the greatest sports. I think a lot of the competitive side of it, for sure. I am overly competitive, almost maybe to a fault at times. I got to win at Monopoly. I mean, it's kind of can be, you know, but I would say that sport, the discipline that you have to have with hockey, it's, you know, learning to play with other players, you know, being coached, the coachability, those types of things. I mean, that's a big aspect in horses, right? I mean, to be able to work under somebody, be mentored and things like that. And so I think the discipline, the coaching, the teaching, all that type of stuff kind of intertwines, and it's all a big part of anything you choose to do in life.
I agree 100%, Brandon. I love that you mentioned hockey. My son, in high school, loved lacrosse. So I always consider that kind of hockey without ice skates, right? And he just loved it.
Ma'am.
And then he went on to do barrel racing and pole bending in 4-H. And again, because he was just so competitive and he was sick and tired of judges who were so subjective. He was, I just want to be the fastest and then I'll know I'll win. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know what? You can't, I think with a horse, with a sport like lacrosse or hockey, you take the subjectiveness out of it and you gotta be accountable, right? For getting better and things like that. I think those are invaluable lessons growing up personally, and to play with others and to be a team player and things like that. I don't know where I would be without that experience personally.
Well, and reining is, of course, a sport within our equine industry, and it's a sport not only individualized, but a team, right? Because you have to be one with your horse. So there's so much involved in it. It's fantastic. Yep. Yep. So you, Brandon, you've made many level four finals yourself as a pro, and then you've also helped many non-pros reach success in our highest level. Yes. How does having a successful backup impact a run? We're doing dive deep into the backup today. What are things that you do when you ride a backup, and what are things that you do when you coach a backup to let people have success?
Well, I'm a big, backup is probably one of the most more valuable parts of training. I think it teaches a horse to give their face. It teaches a horse to connect hand to hock, meaning when I pick my hand up, I get those hocks to engage and move, and you get you put them in an athletic position. So the backup is so important. Obviously that's how we teach our horses to slide, right? I mean, when they're sliding, they're in the backup position, correct? So, when teaching that, I mean, there's so many parts of it. I can sit here and make it complicated, but the reality is that there has to be, there's three cues for stopping. You've got your leg release, your hand, and whoa. And I teach my horses to back up off of each of those cues, right? So, but I think it's important when you're teaching a horse to back up, you don't want to make that particular maneuver miserable, right? Does that make sense? So, absolutely. You know, for example, if you take a hold of that face and they're flinging their head up, I may not stay backing up. I may pull their chin to the side, move their feet laterally, and then offer them that backup again. If they don't want it, I may pull them around the opposite direction, and I make the backup the reward, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I am going to take some notes on that for my own self, even though I'm not competing in a reining pen. My horse definitely needs help with that, and I never would have thought of doing that. So
good. Brandon, at least I know I helped somebody.
See, you're one for one.
Absolutely.
Brandon, if there's other folks listening who, you know, like me, maybe they're not competing in a reining pattern, but mm-hmm. maybe they're at home with their horse and just want to improve that piece because it is such a vital component to so many sports across the board. What are some other exercises or things that you might suggest for them to do at home?
Obviously a lot of lateral flexion, meaning pulling their chin to the side. I love to pull their chin one side, and I'll put that leg on them and make them yield off that leg and give their chin, and meaning there's no resistance. Their neck's not up. They're not pushing on my hand, and their belly is not pushing on my foot. And then I'll release them, and then I'll do the opposite direction, because basically what you're doing there is you're breaking that horse laterally. You're breaking him free side to side. Okay. So then mm-hmm. when you pull on both reins in the backup, you're going to have that connection and that respect in your hand, right? If you've got a horse that's pushing on your hand, usually they're pushing on one side, right? So if you're going to back up and that chin is pushing to the right, well, you have a sticky spot on that right side. So I'll do a lot of lateral bending, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I do a lot of is I try to, when backing up, I back up a lot in circles. I don't always back up in a straight line. I build the hindquarters up, I might back them in a circle to the right. I might back them in a circle to the left. I'm very patient. I don't expect, I don't expect this horse to back up perfect every day. You're going to have days where they're going to be maybe less willing to do it. I'm just going to be patient, mm-hmm. work through it. Like I said, I might go back to my flexion, things like that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of creating things that are a little different and a little more fun or unique, because I know for myself, being at home in an arena, if you're not with a trainer, sometimes your little drills get a little monotonous.
Absolutely. And I don't want to have to beg my horses to back up, right? Offer it to them. I release my feet and they don't want it. I'm going to make them wish that they had done it. That's when I might pull them around. Then mm-hmm. I'll take my legs off. And it's called a creep. I really want my horses to creep, meaning I just want them to drop their neck and back up on their own willing with my legs released. If I close my feet, they should stand there and be quiet, right? So mm-hmm. that I think they have to want to do that, right? You know, there are times I do not bump my horses a whole lot, very, very little. I like to pull on them because I think when you bump, sometimes you can lose connection. I'm not saying I never do it, but very, very rarely. I like to pull, and I want them to balance on my hand through that backup. So that's a huge part of it for me. I don't mind if that horse is just a little bit on my hand, because that's giving that horse a little bit of balance. So, you know, that's something else that I practice when I'm backing up. I make sure that that top line stays flat and they're just kind of on my hand very, very, very little. Not, I don't want them scared of the bridle. I want them to be able to balance on it. And that way they stay in an athletic position in that backup, their bellies up and things like that.
This is so awesome. I can't wait to go back and listen to this while I'm on my horse and do some of this myself. Brandon, I also want to touch on, you know, I run our youth programs here at NRHA, and you know that I just can't really go 5 minutes without talking about the kids in our industry. We talked earlier about our youth going to DC, and you have two little ones that are always a part of every event we have. So I just want to kind of hear from you, you know, what is so valuable to you about having your kids in this industry and about it really being a family affair for you guys at these events?
Well, it kind of goes back to what we said in the beginning with when I played hockey, is being around a group of people that enhance your life, right? And my kids, we have my barn is a culture here. We try to build a culture of people that it's a family oriented environment. And for my kids to be around horses, and to be around the people that we get to ride with, I think it's so important that socially, but it also enables them to, you know, other kids that ride here, it gives them that competitive edge. You know, we went to a horse show this weekend, and I have a couple kids that ride in the short stirrup, and they're all competitive with one another, including my daughter. And I love it. And it's good. Obviously there's lessons to be learned with that. So I think with these kids, you know, animals to me open up, they open up so much for people. I think it creates that connection. Right. And I think, I just think it's invaluable personally, you know, and I know my kids, we make them, it teaches them discipline. It teaches them responsibility. I don't know what I would do without this, having horses for my kids. And my son, he's more into baseball and football right now, but he still interacts with horses. My daughter's ate up with it. So I'm hoping to win the lot sometime soon to be able to buy her a nice horse. So, but, yeah, I hope that answers your question there.
Absolutely.
What a joy it has been, Brandon, to have you on the show. If I lived in Ohio, I would be knocking at your door going, hello, can I ride with you, please? That would be great.
We'd love to have you. Our door's always open. So.
Well, that's wonderful, because if I'm ever out there, I might just come do that. Just be aware that is something that I love to do. I have a question for you. Where do our listeners find you? What is your website? What is your Facebook page, et cetera?
It's just Brandon, Brandt Performance Horses on as the website, Brandon Brandt, and then Brandt Performance Horses on social media. We're pretty easy to find. I think it's, that's pretty much it.
Perfect. So it's Brant for those listening, performancehorses.com, and then same on Facebook and social media. So thank you so much today, Brandon, for being on our show. We just really appreciate it. And we're very excited to see you here at the Derby very soon.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Wow, Brandon is such a amazing human being. And not only is he an amazing trainer, but what fun it sounds like he has with his clients. And of course, all of his ice hockey career turned into now reining career and all of the things. And, you know, he's going to continue down the path of doing the reining. And even though this tragic barn fire occurred just last Saturday, people are already coming out of the woodwork to help. So again, Sarah, can you let everyone know how they can do that for the families?
Absolutely. And, you know, I just want to again highlight how inspiring it's been to see this horse community and this reining community come together and to support people in need. It just really makes you know how big of an impact that we all have on each other and how close this community is. And truly what a blessing it is to be part of it. I just have never seen folks come together quite in the way that they have rallied behind these families. And again, if you would
like to donate or if you would like to participate in the auction, visit NRHA on Instagram or Facebook, and you'll see links to the fundraiser. And the specific fundraiser page is Brandt and Priest Family Fundraiser. But again, you're just welcome to hop onto NRHA's social media accounts to find this auction.
And if you happen to be with us in Oklahoma City, anytime starting after you hear this podcast all the way until June 23rd, we will be there, and we're also accepting donations at that time for the family. So I'm happy to say hi if you end up coming out in that way. And thank you so much again for all of your support.
So Sarah, how do people find this raining podcast? What's the best way to do that?
I would encourage everyone to visit our website. You can go to nrha.com/podcast. You could also follow us on social media, NRHA Reigning on Facebook or Instagram.
So now go out and have the slide of your life.